Nathan Wright holds MBA and engineering degrees from the University of Kentucky and has channeled these fields of knowledge and insight into the development of a way to wrap your arms around the global energy situation. He has created Game of Energy, and he joins us to talk about it. Thank you for being here, Nathan.
Thanks for having me.
First, let's talk about your background a little bit. You grew up in Eastern Kentucky?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I grew up in Eastern Kentucky, a pretty small town. I like to tell people I'm from Pikeville. They can tell I'm from there because of the way I say it. But yeah, it was, green hills. Spent a lot of my days, hiking back and forth, just doing all kinds of nature stuff. And started to really have an interest in engineering probably around 7th, 8th grade. And just grew from there and started looking at engineering colleges and, toward several, actually. I was being recruited by several and ended up here at UK. So that's rest is history.
You're being pretty modest from what I understand. You scored a super score on your ACT.
Yeah.
And that caught the attention of the likes of like MIT and Rensselaer and a few others.
I was being recruited by some pretty heavy duty engineering schools, I guess. I guess I just kind of glazed over that a little bit, but
why'd you choose UK instead of them?
Well, it was interesting. So I toured, like I said, I toured the various colleges, not all of them, but when I toured UK, It just felt like home for some reason. Like, I don't mean like, geographically home. It just felt like I belonged there. Everybody was really nice. It seemed like the campus was really catering to the students. It seemed like, it was a student first mentality, and the engineering department was magnificent. And it was just one thing after another. It was just like calling me to be there. And so that's what ended up winning me over.
And so your focuses at UK were mechanical and then aerospace as well?
Yes. So the UK only has a mechanical engineering degree, but they have an aerospace certificate. And so I pursued both of those while I was there, as well as getting a mathematics minor.
And I understand that one professor in particular had quite an impact on you. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Alexander Martin. He was my fluid dynamics professor. And essentially he was really the first professor that, didn't just teach, oh, here's this boring math that, you just need to know because they say you do. He actually, pulled it in and was like, here's how the mathematics actually relates to the real world. And he started really opening my mind of how you can use these, what are essentially tools, not just, these horrible things that students hate, but actually use them as tools to really start building the world around you and being able to create. And so I started talking with him a lot after hours, about different research opportunities and things. And he ended up sponsoring my senior design project where we built a small satellite. And that was funded by NASA, and it was, he really did a lot of good things for my education, for sure.
Now, that's kind of continued, too, hasn't it? If I understand correctly, your work on a new satellite design is scheduled for launch in 2018?
Yes. So we began the project, and most of our design has still survived testing. And there's been various groups that have taken it from there. And the progress is such now to where it's at a high enough, what's called a TRL, technology readiness level, that it's to the point where it can actually fly in a real mission. So it will be doing a launch. It'll be low Earth orbit mission. And if that's successful, then it will actually do a real mission that's, full orbit, deorbit, coming reentry and everything. So...
And what will be its function? What will it do?
So the function of the satellite, I don't know if you know this, but there are, chunks of space debris that don't actually burn up in the atmosphere. We all assume it does, but it actually doesn't. So a lot of that is man-made. And there have been times where, things like entire rocket boosters have crashed in people's farmhouses and things. And obviously that's a big danger. And, right now, while we have a lot of stuff in space, it's not as much as it's going to be because obviously we're getting more and more technologically advanced. We're going to start having more and more in space. And so things are going to start to get a lot more crowded and a lot more things are going to start coming down. And so the purpose of the satellite is to measure and record various types of vehicles re-entering and burning up to where we know more about the physics of what actually happens with those vehicles. There was already one satellite made to do that function, but the problem is that it's not really flown that often because there's only that one particular thing that it does. With our satellite, the change we did to it was we took what they had and we implemented what's called the Universal Payload System, or UPS. And the full satellite name is Kentucky Reentry Universal Payload System. And essentially what it does, it allows anyone a very easy ability to place any instrumentation they want inside of the satellite. And so what that's going to result in is that, universities, other research institutions, really anyone, even if you don't have a very big budget for space, you can be a very small research institution, can run this satellite platform and be able to implement all the instrumentation they want to run a mission. While they're running their mission, in the background, we're running ours. And so that's kind of the benefit. It was a way of making it more accessible to gather this data to be able to make better vehicles in the future, to where we don't have things falling to the ground. They will burn up in the upper atmosphere.
Now, what led you from engineering to pursue an MBA?
Well, I've always had kind of an entrepreneurial spirit. I've probably started trying to run my own little businesses since, I don't know, third or fourth grade. I did a die-cast model business where I would actually make die-cast models and sell them, and I would sell them individually as well as full sets at school. And I was kind of hurting the break sales at the school. So on break, kids go up to the concession stand and spend money. Well, they were spending less money, and I was also selling bubble gum. I would sell one piece of bubble gum for a quarter, five for a dollar, like that was a deal or something. And I was kind of taking advantage of the fact that nobody could drive yet, because this was back 4th through 7th grade is when I did this. And I was actually told by the school that I could no longer do that because they actually noticed a very large decline in these concession sales because I was selling things and taking their money before break. I kind of knew that I was, but it seemed like an opportunity, so I took it. And so I've always done things like that. And I also started a business in inventing, patenting, and licensing 2 years before I graduated with my engineering degree. And so I was already kind of well versed into the business realm, and so an MBA just seemed like a natural extension to better learn. I was already learning from my mistakes, but I wanted to stop making so many mistakes and get a formal education. And so that's why I chose the MBA.
So how did your interest in gaming or creating a game come into play in all this?
Yeah, well, I guess I've always been a gamer, but it was a conversation with my dad, actually, that spawned this game of energy. And we were just talking one day. He owned several coal mines, and he was also trading energy stocks pretty much daily. And it was in the various types of energy stocks. And he was starting to ask me questions about the energy stocks that he was trading in. Even though he may have been trading in them, he didn't understand the underlying technology of them. And so I started answering these questions that he was just kind of curious about. And when I got done with, the different explanations and he was done asking questions, he said, this is really interesting stuff. There should be a way to get people to know more about this because, it's not like it's really discussed on the news in such detail. It's usually, something polarized. And, he was like, there should be a way to put this out there. And I was thinking, like a book or a blog or, something like that, informational. He said, what about a board game? And it was weird that he would even suggest that, because he probably hadn't played a board game in years and years since I'd played with him as a kid. And I was like, that's a really good idea. And so it just kind of started from there. And I started, researching the industries more thoroughly because I wanted to do, the pros and cons of each as unbiased as possible, everything fully researched and facted out. And also researching board game techniques. You'd be surprised how much goes into design of a board game. I had no idea until I started this process. And it just, one foot in front of the other, I guess, and just keep progressing and finally got built into what it is today.
And in this day and age, why a board game as opposed to a video game?
Well, it's not just because I like to be different, even though I do. But, there's something about having a tangible experience. So, with video games, you have a lot of what's happening in that world happening in the background. The computer's taking care of it for you. Whereas with a board game, you're a lot more cognizant about what's actually going on. Like when you place an industry on the board, it's not just a tally on a video game going up and you're like, okay, good, that happened. With an actual board game, a tabletop game, when you place an industry on the board, you're then having to physically increase your meters, you know, whether it's an energy meter or an environmental meter. And so having that tactile feedback really enforces what you're doing. And so you don't really get that with a video game. And further, you know, video games, you know, they're constantly being made. They're just everywhere. Whereas something like a tabletop game, you know, it is more of a niche market, but because of that, the people are more passionate about it. And so it's a lot more engaging, a lot more fun to actually market to these people, because, you know, you go to conventions and, you know, it's really fun meeting the people and actually playing with them. It's just something about playing with someone across a table that you don't get with an online experience.
So how does it work? How do you win at the game of energy, or how do you lose for that matter?
Well, yeah. So the interesting thing about the game, you know, most games, there has to be a winner. But in this game, there actually doesn't have to be a winner. So you can actually all lose. And so the premise of the game is, you know, it's in modern time and there is a fast approaching energy crisis. And your job is to thwart it before it actually happens. And you have access to all modern day technologies, biofuel, fossil fuel, hydroelectric, nuclear, solar and wind. And your goal is to place them in the various climate zones and the various geographies on the board to generate not just enough energy to thwart the energy crisis, but also do so in an environmentally responsible manner. So you find yourself having this push and pull of, you know, your larger industries generate a lot more energy, but aren't as environmentally friendly, whereas your smaller industries are a lot more environmentally friendly, but don't produce a lot of energy. And so you find yourself basically making an energy portfolio like someone would do in the real world to try to combat the energy crisis. And so while the goal of the game is to generate enough energy, the credits you get from the government to be able to build are based on your environmental impact. And so, you know, that's where the energy portfolio aspect comes into play.
And what can a person come away from the game with? What can they learn from this game?
Well, you know, I've found that most people that play the game, they come into the game with a preconception, whether it's, you know, favorableness to one industry or hatred of another or whatever it may be. And they begin playing the game with those preconceptions. So let's say that you're really pro, I'm just going to name something, you're really pro hydroelectric. And so you start out the game building pretty much nothing but hydroelectric, which you can do. But it gets to a point about midway through the game, and there is a turn counter because there is an impending energy crisis. So you don't get all day to play. You only get 6 rounds. And so about midway through the game, you start saying, well, you know, I'm generating, you know, this or that, but I'm falling behind, you know, compared to my other player across the table from me. You know, they're going to beat me. Or maybe you're thinking, oh, I'm not generating this fast enough and there's only 3 more turns left. So then you start having to diversify. And once you realize you have to diversify, then you start looking more rationally at what fits where and in what way is it better and what way is this worse, you know, things like that. And so by the end of the game, you may have industries built on the board that you never would have thought that you would have chosen. And so you then see why things are built the way that they are and why we're doing things that we do based on the numbers that are in the game. So you really learn about all the industries. There's also fact cards in the game that just randomly come up and it tells you a fact about the various industries. It's nothing preachy or anything. They're just kind of there. You know, it is a fun game first, educational game second.
And would you say the youngest age you would recommend?
So on the box is 14 and up. There have been kids that have played it much younger. There's like 8 or 9 year olds that have played. In fact, I think I have some pictures on the website of a little boy that was really interested. I mean, he's like leaned over the game, like, you know, explain this to me. And he was getting it. I mean, he ate that stuff up. And there's been several actually that have come by. A lot of girls are interested in the game as well. They really like how the industries all work together and everything. So, you know, a lot of gaming, you know, people assume, oh, it's, you know, it's a boys thing, but really we've had about 50-50 boys and girls play this and really enjoy it. So it's a really nice game for the family, really.
Now, I know that you've been raising funds with a Kickstarter campaign. Is that over now? Or is it still underway?
Yeah, so the Kickstarter is now over. The goal was $15,745. That was going to pay for the initial print run and allow us to have some left over to sell, because we're wanting to build a business out of this, to be able to sell other games as well. But we ended up raising over $18,000. Wow. And yeah, so it just blew my mind, honestly, that people would support a game like this and give that much money to it. And while it is over, we still have pre-orders going on that give you a slightly better deal than it will be in stores. Gameofenergy.com is how to go on there and pre-order a copy. And we're still raising money. In fact, I think just last week we sold another like 10 games, I guess, which, you know, doesn't sound like a lot, but for someone that's, you know, really just now starting to sell and nobody's ever heard of us, you know, it's definitely thrilling to wake up and, you know, look at what sales you made while you're sleeping. It's a pretty fun experience.
All right, Nathan, thank you very much for stopping by. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. I appreciate you for having me.
This podcast is produced in the studios of Dynamics Productions, an audio recording and sound design facility in Lexington. On the web at dxaudio.com. Dynamics Productions. We listen.